to WW, my star, my perfect silence.
WW. I mean, who you figure that is, yeah?
Woodrow Wilson? Willy Wonka? Walter White?
You got me.
That was the first time Christian heard my beautiful introduction to usher in the final 8 episodes of AMC's Breaking Bad. Welcome to Cavaliers Break Bad, one of the many unofficial Breaking Bad podcasts around. And here we are. It's back, baby. I'm Saro.
I'm Creepy.
And, so we're going to talk about the most recent episode, Series 5, Episode 9, or Season 6, Episode 1, for those who are confused, Blood Money.
I was already delirious enough, and then you just do that.
That kind of fucked with you, didn't it?
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
I told you it was ridiculous.
I appreciate that. That's a good 8 to 9 to 10 out of 10. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, cool. So is there anything we should mention before we get into it? I'd just like to mention that I first saw the episode yesterday, you know, lost my shit, went out, got season 4, all of season 4. Since then, have watched up to Hermanos, which is episode 8,
yeah.
And then watched it again today. So pretty much all of the last kind of waking time for me has either been watching Breaking Bad or talking about it. So
yeah, I watched the episode and had to go and do some stuff, and it was really difficult going about my day. And having to kind of live in the same world as people who hadn't seen Breaking Bad, it was quite confronting.
And then, like, somebody comes along who has seen it, and yeah. You're just like, blah, blah, blah.
I was just yelling at them. Actually, so we watched the episode separately yesterday, kind of as soon as we possibly could, and then...
Came together.
When I came home last night, my housemate was watching it, and I kind of had shit to do, so I really couldn't watch it, and I knew I was watching it today, but I just kept coming outside and going, wait, watch this, just, you think it's... and then screaming, and then we just watched it again.
Yeah, just then.
But such a great episode. I'm such really, a good yeah, way to start.
Really great.
The new series,
and it's kind of cool because it doesn't feel like a season opening or anything. It really kind of, it's kind of like
the episode does.
It's kind of like it's kind of like ICU in a way to season 3. Just kind of like it is the episode after the mid season finale in a way.
Yeah,
and all right. It really is. So
it brings everything together.
Yeah, but it's an episode. Like it's not like a bookend. Like it really is just a strong,
except for the flash forward, which is anyway, that's a good way to go in.
Yeah.
So like we begin with like 1 minute of solid disorientation. Like the thing is, I knew this was coming because this had leaked through Comic-Con, and I tried to avoid spoilers as best I could. But and we should mention, like, as if it's not fucking obvious, we're going to spoil everything in this episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
we will not talk about the next time on Breaking Bad until the very end.
I didn't really get all that much from it.
Yeah, no, neither did I, but it's worth mentioning, but we'll say that to the end. Anyway, so I found out about this cold open through Comic-Con. I knew that it returned to the same timeline as the start of Live Free or Die. And I knew that the White House would be dilapidated. I didn't really know anything else. So I knew that when we saw kids skating in a pool, in a space, I was like, all right, that's going to be the White Pool.
Right, yeah. It took me a little bit longer.
Yeah, so how long did it take? About a minute?
I don't think so. I think there's like... There's the shot that comes up and you see the... you see the diving... Or you see the diving board or something at the edge of the pool with no... It's just metal, and you're like, what's that? So you see a little bit of the space, and then there's a bit more, and then you're like, that looks familiar. And then it kind of goes a little bit wider, and you start to see the space, and then it clicks instantly. You're like, oh, that's the best.
Oh, shit.
That's so good. And the thing about it is that it has kind of multiple passages. Normally, in a lot of the cold opens, you've kind of got one piece of action, and that's kind of all there is. So, like, there would be a time where maybe... that would be a strong enough cold open on its own. Like, like the kids in skating around the pool.
It was going to be the cold open.
You see that.
It was the original plan cold open. I was listening to this today. It was they were going to basically just have the pool, and then they thought, well, nothing really happens.
But that's never a bad thing with the Breaking Bad cold opens. Like, that's the thing.
No, but I mean, I'm glad that they did what they did.
No, absolutely. Like, I think it's a very, very kind of startling, kind of really... I mean, everybody who's going to be watching that at the moment particularly is going to be like watching every second, just like clapping their hands, just going ee!
and like every so, you know. Every there's so many reveals, so it's like, oh, it's, yeah, it's, so what, it's the what
we've got. The first one is that you've got the completely abandoned, dilapidated White House. Now they've completely boarded up.
Yeah, you've got the fact the graffiti on the wall, Heisenberg, is really important for a few reasons. So some people have been suggesting that this is like kind of a mark, a target, like the cartel or Declan or Lydia's connections or whoever is after Walt has written Heisenberg on his wall as a sort of, we're coming to get you. But I actually think, and what would be more interesting, and this ties into the whole thing when Carol gets her shock at the end, is that it's like a local folk legend, like Heisenberg was here, you know, this is that house, the drug dealer that was under everyone's
and
noses.
And that's the thing, I feel that's definitely a thing, because like, I mean, it's all very well for kids to kind of like photograph each other skating and everything, but there's a kid like pointedly, like with a camera, like, we're skating at Heisenberg's house. Yeah, that was definitely another element to it for me.
It's almost like, it's like the Blair Heisenberg or the Albuquerque Heisenberg project.
I reckon it might even be bigger than like local folk legend. Like
national news.
And that's the thing it's kind of been building to. Think about that headline. Like, everyone's kind of thought of the headline that Breaking Bad kind of suggests, which is like school teacher turned meth cook.
In season two, Jane says this exact thing.
Oh, she says pretty good.
Local news could be national. So yeah, definitely. Like, if this all
that's been in your head from the beginning. Like so to kind of see something at least hint at that is pretty good.
Yeah, already. That he has become notorious, and furthermore, he's not just notorious, he's feared. Like, he's,
of course, when we see with Carol.
So obviously it's not just come out that he's a drug dealer, that, you know, something serious has gone down. And so I just want to put it out here. I reckon Skylar's definitely dead. Skylar is...
I know the theories on this are the... are you going on the adopted behavior theory, or which one points
that,
you to...
That feeds into it. I think the fact that when we see him in season 5, episode 1, he's rearranging his breakfast and he's taken on
the bacon in the shape of his age.
Of his birthday, but also he's taken on her last name.
On her last name, yeah.
But if you just think about, like, roughly what we know, right? So Walt's on his own. The house has been cleared. So either there's no reason for them to live there, or they've gone into witness protection. Walt has got nothing left to live for. He's taken the ricin. Now, if he's got a big machine gun, there is no one to give the ricin to but himself. So I think that's my other big prediction. I think that the ricin is definitely for him. I think it's an insurance so that he's not taken alive. And if you think about it,
it's a weird cyanide capsule in a way, if it takes 3 days to do its thing.
But that's kind of the brilliance of it.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, you take it, you go, right, I am going to die. I mean, you will be fearless in battle. So I can completely see why the ricin would be a suicide pill. And then you think, then you kind of reverse engineer it and go, all right, so we know, and Vince Gilligan has said this, and I think it's kind of implicit by this stage, he's got the machine gun to help someone. Because just the way it's played, and from what we know, he's not doing it to save himself. And I just can't imagine a position where Skyler's in danger from people who are fought with machine guns. That definitely seems like a problem Jesse would get himself into. So I think Skyler is dead. I think that the way Walt acts and just everything we know, it points towards his family being gone. The only thing he has to briefly live for is to have one last act of redemption towards Jesse.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. Mm. And then he shuts off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because you kind of like with what you mentioned there, and with like mentioning the Heisenberg on the wall, like as a warning thing, which I don't necessarily buy into as much as say like kids breaking in, like spraying Heisenberg.
No, and I think it's
more
interesting. Yeah. If it's like
But I think if the question that does raise is if and who could become a clear antagonist to Walt. I mean, as much as you can say clear antagonist in a show like Breaking Bad, but in terms of opposition to Walt this for the remainder of this season, it's a very interesting thing. There is very clear antagonism where he very like to him in with Lydia in this episode in the car wash.
That and I think bringing Lydia back in this episode is definitely an indicator that she will be a source. Yeah. But also Jesse Plemons is in the main cast.
Mm. So and he wasn't in this episode.
No, he wasn't. All. But he will be back.
But his presence is suggested with the 68% that Lydia mentions.
Also suggested by the fact that his name is in the main cast in the promotional photos.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, like they want you to remember that Walt has loose ends.
But just and also, diegetically, his presence is suggested.
Yes, and also Lydia says, I'm in danger.
Mm-hmm.
I am the danger. But maybe. And also, I was listening, sorry to get meta again and kind of use this to predict plot, but Laura Fraser, who plays Lydia, has said that Lydia is colder and more ruthless this season. Cool. So take that for what you want.
Cool.
And just the other great thing about this scene. So obviously he says, hi, Carol, who's his neighbor. She drops the bag of oranges, which the is a nice oranges, callback very to, nice Ted. To Ted.
And also the Godfather.
And obviously the Godfather. And just in case people are wondering, that's not the same neighbor that he sent in to test the bomb in Face Off. Just in case you were thinking that, it's not.
So we're still stumbling our way through the cold open at the moment. So, of course, he goes...
We're
and
doing
gets a
better
rice
than Vince Gilligan. Like, I was listening to the Insider podcast. It was like about half... it was fucking half an hour on the cold open.
To be fair...
To be fair, really, we didn't write it either.
Yeah.
So...
But, like, and he's also, like, stumbling over himself, like, trying to think about what can I say? Like, what the hell do I say here without giving away, like... everything.
Yeah, we can just... We have, like, carte blanche to just make any crazy
prediction we
want.
I also love, and it's the strongest moment...
That'd be the shit thing about writing Breaking Bad. You wouldn't get to watch it.
Poor you. But, like, the one most... In terms of just, like, the strongest individual moment, like, just aesthetically, and it's a callback, is on when Walt gets up and looks in... It was cracked mirror, and it's another distortion of the Heisenberg face. It's that's beautiful. Oh, that where is the, beautiful. It's so surreal.
I know,
Where was it sitting, you mean? Like
no,
in the
where
room
was
or?
The original cracked mirror?
Which one is it? Which one is it, do you mean?
Oh, what I'm saying is it's a callback to when he looks in a cracked mirror.
And no, it's the when he beats up the tissue dispenser in the bathroom.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, cool. So it's like that just that visual... kind of, I suppose, a motif of just, like, looking at some kind of distorted, reflection of himself.
Yeah, cool. So, all right, so anyway, we get Hi Carol, we get Drop Bads, and then we get... Bum, 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 bum. and then, of course, we get the very, very slow, torturous push-in to the bathroom. Now, are you that well-versed in your Breaking Bad sets that you immediately knew where they were?
That it was Hank on the shitter?
Yeah.
No, not immediately, but, like, it kind of... I was just like, so somebody's in the toilet, well...
Yeah, I worked it out immediately. I was just like, so, yep.
I was just like, oh, so we're coming straight back
in. Yeah, and also because you can hear vaguely outside. And it's just nice. It's a nice way to reset that scene. And it has this kind of thing of, like, that man we knew before is not going to walk out. Like, he's going to be fucked up.
Yeah.
And the great, like, when he comes out and Walt is in the nicest mode possible with his daughter, just kind of, yeah. And then, like, when he opens and
the first line
is, you are the devil.
And it's just Marie's being like, oh.
It could almost be too on the nose, but it's just sort of like, nah.
It's
just
nice,
works.
Like, finally somebody, like, acknowledges, like, you know, Hank with goatee and everything, somebody finally acknowledges some kind of satanic element of Walt.
Yeah.
Just like, that goatee's been staring you in the face, just Lucifer staring you in the face since the end of season 2.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little moment. It could be on the nose, if not for the fact that you've kind of been waiting for it for a while.
Yeah, I know. And then, of course, so, like, there's the whole car crash thing, you know, you're not feeling so good. And once again, like, you know, as plot allows, but also they've done their work because, like, there's so much we were talking about how Hank's PTSD has been set up. And it's interesting about how much this reminded me of his panic attack in the elevator in season two, after he's killed Tuco. Like, very, very similar. Better. but very similar.
Yeah.
And Dave Porter really just goes off. In fact, Dave Porter was killing it this episode. Dave Porter. Yeah.
Dave Porter, the composer. Composer, yeah.
In the cold open, he was killing it. And then in the... when Hank crashed the car, it was pretty insane. You just don't have any professional bone in your body, do you? And sneaky edit, and we're back. Anyway, as we were talking about the PTSD and how they'd set up and the car crash, and, you know, do you have anything to say for yourself, Christian?
It was a professional call. No, sorry, the car crash.
Right. You're hopeless.
Yeah,
no. But
I love referring to this as professional. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. But just on Hank, like, sure, like it's a nice kind of callback to that kind of. I really love, just for me, because the one that really evokes is Hank in the elevator, which I have whinged about at length about Johan Renck kind of talking, like, kind of doing the ambient, kind of overgoing with the ambient in the really, really enclosed, like, really intimate space. But I love the push-in, because yeah. it's like a really, like, long push-in, and you just get some kind of sense of the damage and the environment, and I love it when you can see a bit of environment and then a character.
Also, so, it's really funny, because AMC released these extremely vague trailers, where it was, like, a shot from each episode. So the first shot was, like, that bump in of, and you didn't even see, it was like 2 seconds, literally, of when Hank's driving the car. It's like, okay, so we know that Hank will be driving angrily.
Right.
And then the other one was Jesse's head reflected in the table with the cockroach. 2 seconds of that. So basically a still image. And then the third one was Walt standing outside looking anxious, holding the tracker. But of course, you didn't know it was the tracker. So as the episode was going, I was kind of like checking them off. Like as he was driving, I was like, ah, so that's where the driving image comes from. Great. But yeah, no. And the strength of this whole bit with crashing the car was basically, I just like the fact that we need a strong visualization of sort of this revelation for Hank and like a dramatic that isn't him just coming out and like, shooting Walter in the face. And
as we know, Dean Norris can perform the fuck out of a panic attack.
Yeah, Dean Norris was so good in
this.
So good in this episode.
His best moment for me, though, was when Walt was just about to leave and he's just kind of like, he just kind of struggles through a smile, just like, dear brother-in-law.
Yeah, and it's really sad.
That entire scene they both performed the shit out of. And we will get there because I'm sure we can talk about that longer than we can probably talk about the cold open. But there are a couple other details we kind of have to get to first.
Well, the kind of the part that, you know, the first bit that I was really like, ooh. The first bit after the cold open that really got me going again was the car wash, because I was really going, so what did Walt do? Because, like, we really had no idea what the logistics of Walt quitting was. That was really unclear as of gliding overall. And I think what they did here was so good because, of course, you know, just plot-wise it makes sense. But as the perfect businessman, it's really funny that Skyler's sort of passing out these little sort of... He gets to kind of Heisenberg light, you know, in the car wash. Like, you know, Walt thrives on solving problems. It's so essential to his... He needs something to solve. So, you know, he's making up this whole bullshit with the air fresheners and coming out and he has to run it through Skyler. And look, there's a problem and I've got a brilliant idea. And then, you know, and then, of course, he's building an empire again of car washes. So it's nice to see that kind of the same things that sort of defined him as a meth cook are going into the car wash. And obviously the car wash, I doubt, will kind of... That car wash is going to go out of their hands eventually. I think I can say that with some confidence. But it's still, like, what they're doing with that at the moment is really nice.
I love also the suggestion, like, let's maybe go to, like, Walt is just, he's so practically minded. He's moved from one empire to, he's trying to move from one empire to another.
And he's trying to make it like the meth empire, you know, he's trying to make it like, you know, these are decisions and we gotta, you know, and obviously, I mean, it's all so Fringian. Gustavo Fringian.
Nice.
So there's that great shot where Skyler's serving a customer and we get that swing around and it's Lydia. Now, once again, I will ask you, did you know it was Lydia before it was revealed to be Lydia?
I think, yeah, I think I think
I immediately, yeah, when she starts here, I'm like, it's Lydia. Lydia's turned up. I know it's Lydia. And I don't say this is a flaw to the show. I'm just, yeah, I'm just psychic. But no, I just thought, like, you know what would make this scene really good? Lydia. And there's Lydia. But, and then this whole bit's so fantastic because it's Lydia bugging Walt at his sort of his front, his legitimate side, and him just not breaking, like him staying, just alternating between have an A1 day and, you know, get out, which is exactly how Gus treated Walt whenever Walt came in and started having a whole fuss
and
Los Poros Humanos.
And that's the thing, because, like, we will get into it when we look at season four, but so much of what, like, Walt is doing is kind of looking at... So, and we notice it in season three that, like, in certain ways, Walt and Gus are kind of mirror images of each other.
Gus is what Walt wants to be.
Yeah.
It's so, like, before he met Gus, you know, he's talking of someone who is kind of Gus, and then he meets Gus and he tries to imitate Gus. Mm.
Speaking of this as well, did you notice, and this was just me... this is probably nothing, but when Walt vomits into the toilet...
Yeah, he takes the towel, like Gus did.
Like Gus did,
No, everyone noticed that.
That was a nice little mirror.
So, like... Well,
of course, we're talking about in season four when Gus poisons the cartel.
Salud, which I don't think anyone could forget. Yeah, so when he throws up, he puts the towel under his knee. And all right, well, let's run this through. So Crazy 8, he cuts the crust off the sandwich.
Yeah.
Jane?
No, he starts shooting heroin. No, with when he's in the bar with Mike in season four, it's in. I watched it today. It's in episode 5 or 6. Walt has his on the rocks. Mike has his whiskey on the rocks. Walt has his neat, and then after he kills Mike, he has it on the rocks. No, he has it on the rocks.
He has it on the rocks.
Yeah,
and then with
Gus. He does this now.
Yeah, and also his whole behavior with Lydia. And then he's making his...
Apparently something about his car as well, the car he chooses, the car choice. But I don't know about that. But this is more clear.
Was definitely a call. I mean, obviously, Walt wasn't, like, it's not a plot thing.
No.
Like, Walt doesn't know how Gus threw up, but just as a motif, Gilligan kind of going, have you noticed how these guys are similar? It's a cute little way of drawing the two together.
Yeah.
Shit, what's my train of thought? And then, of course, we see Walt making his bacon and having the name Lambert, I think it was.
Yep, Lambert.
So that's lends credence to the theory that I definitely subscribe to, that Skyler is dead come the time of that flash forward. And also possibly Junior and Holly are dead. And possibly Hank and Marie. Everyone's dead, and Walt's about to die.
Mm.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Just one thing before we leave the Skylers. The car wash. Well, actually, no, there's a few things. Have an A1 day. What a pathetic slogan.
So bad, yeah.
It's just but that's the point. Shit. That's the point. No, but there's, like, lame and daggy, and then there's just, like, really? It's just, like, you don't put have a name of business day.
Yeah. Whatever.
No, I'm not saying, like, it's bad writing. Like, it's good.
Yeah, no, no.
It's good bad writing. It's just hilariously, like, not even trying.
Not even trying. That's the point. So, you know. So, what have we... Yeah. I love that. I think that's really cute. It's lovely. So, I think one... Okay, so, obviously, there's a lot of details to kind of talk about in terms of what information that we've kind of been given that we were kind of thinking about. And I think one of the kind of big ones was... Walt's taking treatment for...
Whoa, hang on. Oh, before we leave the car wash, there's also the really important thing that Walt is being honest to Skyler.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of see when Skyler says, who is that? And he's like, that's
former
just,
business associate.
Yeah, yeah. You could kind of imagine people's like, oh, her. She used to work at our faculty for a bit. It's the funniest thing. He would have once. But... You know, he tells the truth, which is smart. But then Skyler does something which is really fucking dumb and confronts Lydia, which she never should have done. Because now Lydia knows that Skyler is in on the whole thing. And that's leverage. Like, that, I think that was a really dumb thing to do.
And that's the thing, like, it almost sneaks past because Lydia's kind of been so fearfully incompetent in being intimidating so far, but, like...
Lydia aided the death of Mike, the prisoner's... Like, she really... She's still alive for a reason.
Yeah, but she's the detached kind of psychopath in a way that kind of, like, goes further than Walt did in earlier seasons, because she's so... She's so entrenched in the corporate culture that she can kind of like get, and particularly Madrigal as well. Yeah. So she can kind of just get whatever done. She doesn't get her hands dirty. I'm really curious to see where Lydia goes. I'm really kind of curious to see almost like Lydia like turn into her own Heisenberg kind of personality, because she's pathetic in her own way.
Yeah.
Like Walt was pathetic in his own way, but then he just gets this menace and this venom that just courses through his veins. I'm really curious to see where Lydia goes, if Lydia becomes the next Heisenberg, and Jesse becoming
it's confusing because his name's Jesse Plemons and Todd becoming her Jesse. That would be a nice way to end. But yeah, I think Lydia is fucking dangerous. Like, really, she is absolutely no sense of morality.
Even if she doesn't, like, become a Heisenberg personality, the fact is that she works at Madrigal and is a bit of a psycho, so and she can kind of anything, be powerful anyway.
And if there is any threat to her, she will do her best to shift it on to someone, probably Walt. Not that Walt wouldn't do the same thing, but still, like, I think they're really...
She's still living within and working within the power structure that
would serve
and
she
that
said
interest.
That she's in danger. You know what they could do with me. And Walt says, and Walt, first of all, you know, you think, well, dick, like someone says, if you don't help me, I'll die. You'd tend to have a bit, but whatever, it's her. But still, you'd make the connection that if they're after her, maybe they're after me. Maybe I should tread lightly. It's very dumb. Both of them in character.
Yeah.
It's the hubris that we have come to expect from them.
Yeah.
Still very dumb.
Oh yeah, absolutely retarded. So, you know, good stuff. Good work. It is a tragedy. So, you know, also just while we're still in the car, it's just another detail. This is just a color detail. And I mean, I'm not reading anything into it, but I just thought it was quite a funny thing. The whites are in white. Both, Walt and Skylar are wearing like almost completely white, or at least very light clothes, and then all their workers are in red. So I don't know. Like, people have made a lot of, you know, particularly, I mean, Marie's purple, like that's the main kind of color element of the show, I suppose. But just so much focus on color. Just throwing that detail out there. Do we think anything about that?
Well, first of all, the red car wash for the uniform of the workers is a holdover from like the beginning of the series from Bogdan, the eyebrows that won't quit. And yeah, I mean, it's just like they don't use Breaking Bad is very color focused, but they don't use it to like symbolize things quite so in the way that some people think. Like, Gilligan's kind of explicitly said that like he's not dropping clues in the colours, in his world, green symbolises X, white symbolises Y. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that Walt is no longer the gangster, he's no longer Heisenberg, he's going to soften his colours. Because he got dark, his clothes got darker as the show went on, and now he's sort of all white. You know, he's pure. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that kind of speaks for itself. But anyway, then we get to the awesome bit, which is Hank going through the evidence. All right, you know why I particularly love this bit was that, like, he's going through everything. It's all the way back through the series. And he's basically doing what so many of the audience would have done. And we
He's just basically having
a marathon. He's just watching all
the
Breaking Bad.
And you're just seeing all of it. You're seeing, like, oh, Jesse's lowrider with the gunshots in it. Oh, hey, Tuco. Like, hey, Gonzo, when he's, like, that photo of when he's laughing at Gonzo from season two. And then, like, and also there's one shot through the glass where you've got his Schrader brow. Like, you've got Hank, like smiling with his Schrader brow, and Hank's off in the background working. And I actually find that to be, like, you know, that was, like, the Schrader brow was always, like, Hank having fun, like, the fun, like, the kind of fun having Hank. And then now this is... He's moved on. He's in a different space.
Yeah,
now,
it's though. Like it is almost unrecognizable.
And also a detail. Before he went to the shitter, they were talking about Schraderbrow.
Yeah, that's apparently true. Yeah, they were talking about Schraderbrow. So wow, that's really interesting. So like the last kind of moment of peace he got before his world turned upside down was about Schraderbrow.
Yeah,
and now his garage has turned into kind of his white whale hunt for Walter White. But
he's found him. He doesn't want to. But that's an interesting thing. But
and also that's obviously going to be explored in future episodes. Yeah, so we can just kind of say that. But yeah, I just think there's this like meta moment of just sort of Hank is rewatching. You know, it's kind of like this very you know, very, like, logical and it makes sense. But, you know, within the series, they're kind of having a massive recap.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. And it's a great way to start your final run of episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Really so intelligent. It's so interesting that when he punches Walt, he punches him over all the boxes with the case files.
Yeah, like he just punches him into
the weight
guilt.
Of effort. Yeah, exactly. Just like, it's like, I love that moment. That's like very kind of like, not on the nose, but like quite clear, I find. So it was really nice. So yeah, just... Hank going crazy, having a marathon, kind of like.
And the music is
oddly upbeat, like whatever the song was, Jim White.
It's
like,
Jim White, something or other. We're gonna play it at the end.
So. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So and just one shot I loved in this montage was just this Hank standing back and eating the chips because he'd have to eat, but he's not gonna eat food. He's just gonna have his chips, and he's just kind of looking at it, going, "What? What am I missing?" Just kind of eating his chips without... I don't know. This is a great small little moment from Dean Norris. But anyway, then we get to the pie-eating contest on the Enterprise.
Oh, with Skinny
When Pain. You saw this, we just like, all right, so clearly Vince Gilligan had a fanfic idea and put it in the episode. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
I reckon it was like Peter Gould or George Masterson or one of the other writers like pitched just this random idea. And then they're like, we should develop that. And then they were just like, no, that's good. Let's just chuck that in.
No.
It actually is
Vince, like, not seriously, but like, I mean, not an actual idea. That
that's his actual pitch for Star Trek 3. Fuck J.J. Abrams. This is Vince Gilligan's
pitch. It'd be better
pitch.
Than Into Darkness, you know? No, but he was like talking about his like Star Trek episode to the writers of, you know, the pie eating contest where, and there's just some great,
I'd love if that was massive foreshadowing. Like somebody dies from eating something. Oh, rice. Ricin.
Pison?
No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I guess.
Obviously, like, so not just getting their guts beamed out into space, but,
I mean,
like,
also
with the ricin.
The fucking performances of Skinny Pete and Badger. You know what I'm really sad we never got is an episode of Breaking Bad exclusively from their perspective.
Like the Rosencrantz.
Yeah, like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
There's so many Rosencrills for Breaking Bad.
No,
there's
but Skinny Pete and Badger Skinny are clearly the ones you need. And there's just so many great, like, Skinny Pete's reaction, like, the whole thing when he's talking about. Every time you come up, like, the color Xerox. What? But my favorite is, where's he sending the pies? Space! Oh!
I just love to see, like, the Tom Stoppard Breaking Bad Christmas special. It'll be so good.
And just all of, like, Skinny Pete is just, like, really hanging on. Like, and she's got a point. He's, oh, no!
Okay, so also, just while we're on it, how long do we think it's going to be before they die?
I don't think they're going to die.
Really?
No, I don't think they'll die. I think...
I really want them to be involved, like, really, really key to the plot, but not just out of Badger being a retard. I love it if for once he propelled the plot by somehow doing something really smart.
Or if Skinny Pete... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see, because, like, they haven't really done anything of significance to the plot since season 3.
Oh, well, like, Jesse wouldn't have been in the RV to kind of tell Hank to fuck off.
That's season 3.
Oh, right, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, still.
Like,
still
thinking about last season, like, what they did basically was, yeah, they just kind of pop in as comic relief. But I like that. They settle into that role. And
there's
also,
Timon and Pumbaa.
I also... Who are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. They're the R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're those two.
Yeah.
But, you also should, if you get season 5 on DVD or Blu-ray, make sure you watch this special feature called Chicks and Guns, which kind of expands upon Jesse's train of thought and goes a long way towards explaining kind of his behavior in this episode, even though it doesn't need it. It's a good scene and it really fills in the gaps in Gliding overall. And it involves Skinny Pete, which is what made me think of it.
Yeah.
I think I'll talk about that when we go through season 5A. Anyway, it's great. Now, we cut to Saul's office and we get who I've written down as tie-dye neck brace.
Like some old hippie dude in some... It's like a tie-dye shirt singlet. It's a singlet, but it's also kind of got, like, the eye, like some kind of, like, New World
Order eye
on it. So you've just got this tie-dye New World Order eye dude in a neck brace sitting, like, this is quite portly gentleman as well. So you're just like, yep. I'd watch Better Call Saul.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, exactly. It just feels like a backdoor pilot to exactly. Better Call Saul.
I swear there's just so many details like that, just like kind of trying
to... Yeah, every time they have an establishing shot of Saul Goodman's waiting room, it's kind of like, there's a show here.
Yeah.
Now, all right, so I don't know if we mentioned this to each other, but I mean, this is, feels like something you must have picked up on. When Jesse gets his joint, i.e. his lucky cigarette, from his pack, and Huel's there, and Huel's eyeing it, I'm like, that is a definite callback to End Times.
How so?
Huel is the one who takes the cigarette off Jesse.
Yeah, he takes the
Huel isn't in it much, and Huel isn't with Jesse much. And the fact that it's not like, it's not a plot point, because, I mean, Jesse's not going to learn anything just from that exchange. But the fact that Gilligan and Cranston and Peter Gould wrote this episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Peter Gould would put that in there. So they've got Jesse, Huel, Saul's waiting, Saul's office, his pack of cigarettes, his lucky cigarette. So the joint is, that is what, like, the Ryson cigarette was. It was the lucky cigarette. It was the joint. Like, to just have all that together, it's kind of definitely just to throw to the audience, hey, remember that?
Yeah. And also that... it's a nice and subtle
one. And not only is it a reminder that of that incident, like, you could do that in many ways, but it's a reminder of Jesse's role in that incident. And I think it hints towards how he could find out. Because I thought that they'd potentially dropped that plot, that Jesse was never going to find out. He was just going to learn of Walt's arsehole-ishness through other ways. Yeah. But by staging that scene, I really think that we're going to find out. And the question is whether he finds out about Jane.
I'd love it if it came out through Huel. Is there any excuse to get Huel involved?
Yeah, I reckon it... Yeah. No, I reckon it will come out through Huel. I reckon that's exactly what they're setting up. But that's furthermore, if I was just thinking, like, right, how does Jane come out? Because really, Walter is the only one who can tell. I'm just thinking, is Walt awful enough to just, like, if Jesse turns on him and accuses him of killing Ross, is
Heisenberg awful enough?
Yeah.
Heisenberg.
Is he vengeful enough to just go, well, I killed your girlfriend?
Oh, he might be.
And, like, would that guilt kind of be enough to drive him to whatever position he's in the flash forward?
Well, we are starting to see the cracks between Jesse and Walter. I mean, Jesse doesn't, for the life of him, for a second, believe that Mike's actually alive.
No, but the thing is, Walt in some way cares about Jesse. It's really hard because it's so tied up with his own selfishness, but he does on some level. Think about it, like, so many times his life would be...
His vanity will result possibly in some benefit for Jesse at some point.
Well, no, it's like he always fucks up Jesse's life. Yeah. But so many... All right, so, like, when he gets rid of Gale for Jesse, like, that gives him no gain. The way that he goes to Jesse doesn't just say... He could have killed Jesse. He could have said, you do... Or he could have taken the money. Saul just could have given him the money. Yeah. But no, he insists on giving it to Jesse and saying, it's your money, son. You worked for it. And, you know, and trying to bullshit this lie. I mean, it's horrible behavior by regular people's standard. But there is this sense with Walt that he kind of still does, in some very perverse way, care about Jesse.
Well, see,
Jesse.
That's the thing, is that the perversion comes out of the fact that he doesn't just care about Jesse. His care for Jesse is tempered by the fact that he's also willing to exploit him at a moment's notice for whatever end. And that's the thing. That is what makes it so insidious. If he cared about Jesse, just flat out, then it wouldn't be a problem. And that'd, you know, probably lead to probably a bit more boring show. But the fact that he will use Jesse for anything at a moment's notice makes him Heisenberg in a lot of ways. He's kind of this odd, like, son figure to him in a way.
Yeah, but the thing is, the antagonism with Mike is linked to stealing Jesse.
Yeah, but the thing is, he doesn't ever outright, to even to himself, kind of allow Jesse to kind of be his son in his head. I know. Are you going to point to when he accidentally calls Walt Jr. Jesse?
Yes, and then in this episode, he's completely doped up.
Yes. He calls Jesse son, yeah, sure. But that's...
All right, you mean he won't consciously
recognize
it.
He won't consciously acknowledge it. So that's the thing, is while that space is always there within him, he will, like, always be in a position to kind of exploit Jesse and not give a shit about
it. But, I mean, you kind of think that he'd do the same to Junior if he had to. I mean...
Oh. See, I don't know if Heisenberg's that...
Yeah, or if, Heisenberg's never come out to Junior. Look, I don't know. It'll be, we'll find that out, because, I mean, Junior...
I think ultimately, Jesse and Walt will be on opposing sides for that
reason. I do too, but I think once the shit hits the fan, Walt will make one selfless move to Jesse. And it won't be redemption, but it will be one last, well, gotta do one good thing before I die. Mm.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it really is just there's something sick, and I didn't even enjoy watching again about his whole performance to Jesse. It's really just icky. It's like it's very similar to. Do you remember in season 5 episode? Is it Madrigal or Hazard Pay? I think it's Madrigal, where they're searching for the rice and cigarette, and then Jesse starts crying, and Walt gives him this whole bullshit speech about how they had to take down Gus and how it's and, all right, oh, Jesse.
Just, Walt is just controlling Jesse's mind. Yeah, in all of season
but
five
he's not product. Now.
But that's the thing is that there was more. It just even in this episode alone, there's more Walt, less Heisenberg in a way. Just Heisenberg in season 5.
That's what I thought when I watched it. I was like, so Walt's back. It's kind of like Walt's, you know, it's that kind of that fake, that sense of self-deception where he thinks he's the good guy. But it's kind of like they've merged now and then they're way more intrinsically linked. I mean, if you the person we see at the car wash is actually really quite similar to Heisenberg. You know, the way he plays Jesse is very Heisenberg-esque. I think...
But he still... I think what makes it bad is that he puts on the Walt face.
Definitely.
I think that's the thing, is that when I see that, I see Heisenberg. I see Heisenberg performing as Walter
but
White.
But so does Jesse now. That's the essential thing. And this is why you should go watch Chicks and Guns, bonus scene from season 5, because it explains, you know, more thoroughly why Jesse thinks the way he is. Mm. I also really like the Kaylee Erman track got mentioned.
Yeah,
that's another alternative. Drew Sharp. Yeah. When you heard the name Sharp, did you immediately recognize it?
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Kaylee, that's another kind of little ending that I can imagine sort of being at towards the end. Like
that's a bit twee, isn't it?
Maybe, but they've earned it.
Yeah.
They've earned a lot.
They'd have to put in Kaylee in a couple more details for that to work, for that to be earned to the end. Particularly, I mean, it'd be so fitting with Jesse's kind of fixation on kids and, like, you know, kind of like that at the end of it, like with all the mistreatment of kids throughout their operation, that one little girl gets millions of dollars of blood money.
Yeah, but also it ties in with the whole thing of Walt, you know, doing it. Like, the whole premise is he's doing it for the family. But clearly that increasingly becomes clear that's not the case. But it also increasingly becomes clear that that is the case for Mike. So it's kind of like Kaylee is, you know, she's the little girl who truly does deserve this kind of, you know, misguided affection. The thing is, though, actually, I was thinking this, and it hit me for the first time. When Mike drops Kaylee off to her mother's house in season 3, it's a quite nice middle-class home. Does Kaylee need money? Does she?
Maybe
it's all paid for by Mike. Who knows? Yeah. But anyway, it's an interesting little...
Yeah. But just on Jesse throwing away his money in Kaylee's direction, I think, you know, you've got two operative kind of aspects of that sentence. Jesse throwing his money away to Kaylee Ehrmantraut. I think the main one is the former.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And that is a massive kind of character trait that we see in Jesse a lot. Like, he's always happy to throw his money away. Literally, I'm watching season 4 today. Yeah. There's a sequence where he's, like, throwing hundreds into a dude's open mouth. And then, like, later, like, in the same sequence, he just says, Hey, everyone, wake up! Money! He just throws, like, a wad of hundreds up into the air. And then everyone kind of scrounges after it. And then later that same episode, some meth head steals the entire bag. Mike brings it back. He's like, yeah, whatever. He doesn't care about it getting stolen, doesn't care about it coming back.
That money, I think it's kind of more... The emphasis, though, on that bit is more that he needs to be with someone. So he's bright. He doesn't care about the money. But this one, he hates... Like, the money is poisonous and he wants to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Anyway...
So, and that's an interesting sequence where he's, like, throwing the money away and one literally, like it's a visually quite just simple, just one literal money going down the drain.
I know. I saw that and I went, like, you know, in any other show that would be the dumbest thing I'd ever seen, but loved it. Actually, speaking of, we may as well just cover that whole sequence now. So he's going to kind of what is shown to be like the bad part of Albuquerque.
Almost the peekaboo. The peekaboo.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah, is that you think about it, it's all going to go back into the drug market. Like, I don't think Jesse really worries about that. I just think...
I know what you mean, but like, he gives what? That must be like $10,000 to that hobo?
I think they're $10,000 stacks. They're fat stacks, yo.
They're fat stacks, yo.
Yeah. Bitch.
But yeah, Jesse... That hobo is going to be... He's going to be eating
I feel and like Jesse, at well the start of every season, gets a very, like, contained character arc.
I see
what you know mean. What I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. He always takes a while to get involved in the plot. Like, he's always just kind of having this thing. And they always find, like, really great ways to externalize them, like, with the party. And this season, he's got the money. And that's kind of his... quote plot unquote for this episode, but really it's just like a bit of character piece, but it works. It's really nice, and it gives the episode its title, so it's clearly the center. But I think
you think
well, I want to mention something about the next on
scene. Okay,
no, we gotta wait to the end because people avoid that stuff like the plague.
Okay, cool.
Just quickly talking about Walt's cancer being back and he's on the toilet. So, did you think that Walt's cancer was back last season?
No, but like, it was a question. Like, it was kind of one of the many questions that kind of left open.
Because remember, in Gliding Overall, he goes to the cancer clinic.
Yeah, he goes and looks
at the mirror. So yeah, I mean, when you saw that scene, if I said to you, money on the table, you reckon it's back or it's...
I probably would have said yes, because it makes sense. It's a nice thing to see coming back. So, you know, yeah.
Doesn't it make it so much worse?
What?
The thing is, you know, at the end of Gliding Overall, Walt tries to, you know, says he's out and he's all hunky-dory, and you kind of think, I still hate you, but I guess you're trying. Whereas now you know that the whole reason is because he, like, basically just to shore up the legacy a bit. So that he kind of doesn't die in the midst of this war with Skylar. And it feels once again so selfish that, you know, it's only when he's dying that he'd take the out. But of course it's the inverse of before in that when, you know... I have cancer, I can cook meth. Oh no, I'm going to live. What do I do? Now I don't want to cook meth. Fuck it. If I'm living, I'll cook meth. Oh, you got cancer again. Well, I ain't cooking meth no more. So it's interesting to see how we've kind of reversed the thought process at the beginning with the cancer and the meth. But yeah, as we said, he throws up with the towel. A la Gus. But then, of course... And, all right, so question. Do you think Walt... would make the connection with Leaves of Grass and Hank the way he did?
Not necessarily. I don't even know... Do we know that he knows that that book is present on that toilet, even? Like, has Walt read it in the bathroom before? Have we seen him read it in the bathroom? Either way...
We know he knows he has the book. In Gliding Overall, there is a shot of Walt in the shower and they pan to Leaves of Grass. And what was great about that shot was because they were doing so many callbacks that episode, you didn't go, oh, that's foreshadowing to what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you kind of remembered. Talking about
something
clever from last episode. But he would have... Like, he's someone... I don't know. Like, I don't think he was, you know, walked into the bathroom, the place where I keep Leaves of Grass. But if someone said, where's Leaves of Grass? He would have known it was in the bathroom.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So,
but then, you know, he's looking after under the bed and he's kind of... I think it's more the fact that it's like, oh, that's odd. But then it's more the fact... It's kind of like everything kind of clicks into place once you have the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I mean, it's only two straws, like Leaves of Grass and the tracker on his car.
Yeah.
But something like that, you know, if it's something that you yourself have put... on Gus Ring's car with Hank, and you see that on your own car, it's not really going to leave a whole lot to the imagination.
What's so hilarious is that he finds out about Hank knowing about him the same way Hank... It's on the toilet. Like, he's... And, like, you know, Hank's taking a shit, and Walt's got his head in that toilet. And, like, you know, he has... He looks up... And he has this look of... You know, kind of the same way that Hank did, but, you know...
Facing the opposite direction... Because
exactly. Like he's in reverse. Like,
if you were to shoot shot, reverse shot, of that realization.
And it's quite, and there's like one of the ways they frame that, because, you know, they cut it, they move around a bit. One of the ways they frame it is head on. So it does feel like the inverse of that scene.
Yeah.
So I like that. But also, when Walt, and because they used this in, this was the other, you know, very short image they looked at in the teasers, they kind of zoomed around. So Walt gets the tracker off his car, and then he's looking in the street, and it just pans out, and it's really, like, scary.
Yeah.
Like, on this street, really, you know, nice. The same street that Victor and Tuco have abducted him on, that he could be being watched on by Hank, by and all Declan, the kind
of,
by and Lydia.
So many kind of intense moments of, like, even, yeah, when he got picked up at the end of, like, the last episode of season 3, he gets picked up there, when he says, "Mike, I don't want you... like you need to get your bug out," and everything, and Mike looks at the ground, sees the scythe written on the, like, a lot of shit has happened there,
and perhaps and the Tuco.
Most yeah and of course yeah yeah so the most intense moment possibly when he realizes Hank knows I'm Heisenberg almost is when, you know, there's nobody around, he's just him standing alone in the same space where previously the threat came from other people outside. It's more the fact that it's just a tracker. There's no human presence whatsoever.
But, all right, so, like, moving on to the garage. And also, I spotted, and I get to talk about this, because I had to...
Yeah, you told me it was
there
coming.
Is an insane callback here, and I don't think you could remember it unless you have watched season 2 really recently, but...
Yeah.
When we go into the driveway...
It's cutting from Jesse driving along.
Yeah, so Jesse's driving along, throwing the money away, and then we cut to a remote control car on Hank's driveway. Now, that kid is in season 2, and he's driving that car, and Marie runs over the car, and Hank gives the kid the money to buy a new one. And, like, it's a bit, it's a character bit, and it's not important, but, like, it's a definite callback, and it just feels like almost a gratuitous amount of continuity. But I say that in, like, a complimentary way. It's just amazing that they put that in. Like, you could only catch that if you'd seen it recently or if you've watched it
or
a
if you just have a good memory.
Yeah, it was. But, yeah. I thought I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah, but just and that you can't speculate about that. Like, you can't,
I'm not gonna assign meaning to it. I bet you know, it's clearly just kind of like you know, they're in the writer's room. Oh, we got to go to Hank's driveway. What's in Hank's driveway? Oh, do you remember when? That whole thing with the car, oh, let's put that back in. And, you know, it's just little touches like that that give Breaking Bad this amazing sense of continuity. And it's really important, like, on a kind of subconscious level, that you feel like this story you're watching now is the end to that story that started in 2008, you know, with season 1.
Yeah.
It's just little touches that keep that sense of continuity.
And sense of, like, something that is a... self-contained story, which it is.
And
that's the thing, is that the treat we get with this is that we get to see a story, not a TV show that was cancelled before its time or overran it or wore out its welcome.
No, and you I know, mean, so and that's precisely what's giving these episodes such prestige. I mean, never really has a show gone out on its peak. I mean, you could argue
on its own terms. Well, I mean, I should.
There have been shows that have ended on their own terms, and there are shows that I personally consider to be the best. They save the best to last. I think the best season of The Sopranos is its last season, for instance. But I can't think of a show that it's commercial peak and it's and like the time when it captured the zeitgeist the most and the time when it was at its highest level of critical acclaim and attention and media coverage happened at the end. I really can't think of any other show that's done that besides Breaking Bad. I mean, like, for instance, Dexter's ratings inexplicably go up each season, but it's creatively bankrupt and everyone admits that. So, like, Breaking Bad, it's unique. And so, anyway, the numbers came in and it was something like 6. It was really high. It was more than double.
Nearly double. The next best.
The previous record. So... AMC is going to be happy, and as is Sony.
Yeah.
And Vince Gilligan will have options. But anyway, let's go to the garage.
Oh, okay.
The garage. The garage. Destiny.
Oh, bloody hell.
So, what did you think? How did you think this scene was going to end? When he walks into
the... How did I think this scene was going to play out? Because, like, we've had however many months of kind of speculation.
I know.
How, we didn't even know if it was going to be this episode. It could have been all the... Like, could have been very far in. Hank could have, like, rallied his troops or got everything ready before he confronted Walt. It could have played out any number of ways. But he's in his garage... And Walt's there, and Walt is the one who does the confronting.
And
Walt is the one who pulls out the
tracker. He is the one who knocks.
Nice. But he's the one who pulls out the tracker and makes Hank respond. Because that's the thing, when Walt says, okay, I better be on my way, Hank's kind of standing there, he's just got this... And Dean Norris just, you know,
He's
unshaven.
Looking really sad.
He's just really...
God,
just,
his facial hair grows terribly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. So, you know, but... Oh.
The thing about when Walt turns around, you think about the rhythm of your average Breaking Bad episode. It would be Walt would turn around and he would say something very oblique and sort of vague about not pissing him off. If you think about, right, so like a very similar scene is like after at the end of Hazard Pay, I think. Kind of Walt gives this speech about Icarus flying too close to the sun, and it's a veiled threat towards Mike. And of course, that's really what I thought was going to happen here. Walt and there was this little part of me that was going, wouldn't it be great if they just punched each other right now? But you know, I didn't want to think that. Go like, no, come on, that's ridiculous.
But that's the thing is, like, you think that, and you mentioned this earlier. Like, do you think when in Fly, when Walt's talking to Jesse and he's nearly going to admit to Jane, or he's thinking about Jane, you're just like, oh, is he going to say it? No, he couldn't say it. And you just think of so many things, and he doesn't.
Because that's season 3, episode 10.
But now
we're in season 5, episode 9, anything can happen.
Where the shit is in the process of hitting the fan.
Yeah, every time you think, no, they wouldn't. They will. So in this episode, when he turns around, you think he's going to say something, and then he pulls that out, then Hank starts to close the drawer, and then the most cathartic punch in television history... Although it's been a good year for cathartic punches because of George Michael punching Michael in Arrested Development. Like, asshole father figures have really been getting there, have been getting their due. But yeah, so just when he punched Walt, I cheered. I was by myself and I stood up and I screamed.
I was pretty like, whoa, yeah. So, you know, but yeah, of course we mentioned that he punches him into the weight of his guilt.
Yeah,
into
the evidence, you know. Like, yeah, literally a stack, he's, you know, he falls into Gale.
Gets him up.
Tuco, yeah, Gus, to everything. Combo.
So, and then he grabs him up, throws him against the roller door, and he refers to a few specific moments. Now, this is interesting. Yeah, and we were talking about this. No, I'm not complaining or anything. I'm just saying. He refers to a few specific moments. He refers to,
Turning the car at the car wash. So when he runs into traffic when he's driving Hank to the car wash, he refers to when he calls up Marie.
Yeah, well, of course, when Jesse and Walt were in the RV, in the ready to have it compacted and called and said Marie was in
hospital.
Intensive care.
Yeah, and he calls him out on the witnesses he killed last season, and he calls him out about setting off a bomb in a nursing home.
Yeah.
This makes sense because it's the ones that have affected Hank personally. It's the ones that he can probably most deliberately track to Walt. Because if you think of most of the other crimes, you kind of can go, well, that could be Gus or that could be anyone, really. But those ones, and like those ones are ones that are really immoral, really dangerous, and, you know, personally affected Hank. But what's also really creepy about Walt in this scene, before he gets really creepy, is he says, this is, oh, this, remember when we, and he emphasizes we were tracking Gus Fring.
Yeah.
And it's really intimidating because it's saying, I know your tricks. I know how you catch bad guys. You can't play me like you did Gus Fring, who you didn't really do
this
that
is different.
To
anyway. And it is,
I'm the man who beat Gus Fring.
Yeah, we'll see, and also...
And he never admits it, by the way. Just like to point out, the end of this scene, Walt has fessed to nothing.
Yeah. Oh.
No!
To the... Yeah, I mean, suppose to us, we know what his...
No, I mean, obviously he knows that Hank knows, and Hank knows that Walt knows that Hank knows. I mean, everything's in the open, but he has not admitted guilt. I mean, that just speaks to the pathological lies that drive Walter White,
and
hangs on to, I am a dying man with a car wash.
Yeah.
Fucking seriously.
Yeah. No, he's a nut. He's a nut job. But the thing is, just on what Hank refers to immediately after punching Walt, after punching Heisenberg. Just for me, Hank has been chasing Heisenberg for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And in that time, he would have become, like, you know, it's his white whale. So to kind of, like, just the intensity of having the white whale in the room with you, who's also, like, some kind of personal, it'd be this kind of weird mix of, I think, I don't know, I just felt like the intensity of that moment would almost be too much. Because he would be thinking about personal stuff, but he'd also be thinking about, you know, the intensity of evil, of like more broad evil,
yeah,
that Heisenberg embodies. So I just almost felt like we know everything that's going on. We know that like Hank knows Heisenberg's evils. I almost felt like that didn't need to be articulated. He could have just hissed Heisenberg in his face, and you know.
Nah, but well, I mean,
the aftermath. Yeah, I mean it's brilliant, but
it
like,
also just makes sense because like he's a cop, so he's gonna like tackle it from a very investigative sort of anecdotal approach. And if you think about sort of he's kind of like it's not just he's not just saying this is what you did. He's also kind of on another level asking, could you really do this? Could you really kill these 10 prisoners? Could you really set off a bomb in a hospital? Because he's pretty much sure, but he doesn't want to be. And he still can't. He still has no proof.
Well, see, this,
from a legal standpoint, he still has no proof. Yeah. And I think there is easily a part of Hank that wants to believe Walt's innocent. But he's
it's almost like he wants to be in denial, but he's just...
Exactly. He's too good a cop and too smart to
driven and been too kind of focused on every detail of this case, and it all makes too much sense for him to really be in denial. But the thing is, for me, I mean, when you ask about how I felt this was going to play itself out, I didn't think he'd... I was kind of like, I love it when stuff simmers. And, you know, kind of just, like, is there, and you know everyone knows it's there. So, like, with a punch and a Heisenberg, like, you know everything's there. And I definitely wasn't expecting it to come out that...
rapidly.
That rapidly and in such quick succession. Like, I love it, and that's one of the things I love about Breaking Bad, is that it gives its beats time to breathe. And that, though, you just hit that many things in that... I mean, just that scene, it's only, like, 4 or 5 minutes long, and most of the beat hitting is done... like in that last minute.
Mm.
And you know, it's such a flurry of information.
And it's also just a flurry of catharsis. I mean, fuck, we've been waiting for this for so long.
But in terms of the coverage of it, in terms of the direction, I think
Cranston, like the really tight framing on the two of them is really kind of, you know,
I think it gets intense. Better once, like, you don't even see the full foreheads or their chins. You're just right there on their faces.
It was actually really funny today. I had a, like, tutorial on mise-en-scene, and we actually talked about this episode. Like, the tutor had seen this, and I'd seen it, and we just kind of, the class who hadn't seen it, just, fuck. So, yeah, that was quite funny. I was thinking about that, the way he framed that all day. But it's so intense, and particularly because... Bryan Cranston and Dean Norris, you know, just have some of the most expressive faces. And the way he plays that line, just... you know, if you think that you don't know me anymore, then perhaps the best course of action is to tread lightly. And he does it way more subtly than that, but there's just...
Are you saying you're not Bryan Cranston?
No,
sorry?
I know, but just in case people had forgotten... like the way he changes the line at tread lightly,
it's
so subtle but so
distinctly Heisenberg.
Yeah, and so noticeable. Like it's just those two lines. Like he doesn't change
it's
it
those two
with
words.
A beat.
It's those two
Sorry, that's what I meant. It's just those two words. It's tread lightly, and he's just quickly Heisenberg, and then he's gone enough to scare Hank, but not enough to give in to his. Because it's kind of just like. I don't care that, you know, I'm not going to admit it. You know what? I'm smarter than you.
But the thing is, you don't see Hank's reaction. The thing is, you just see, like, a gently kind of, like, a tiny shot tracking back really slowly from a wide. The thing is, the only detail that you need to know there for the end of that episode, the beat that they're hitting is not how does Hank react to this new presence of Walter that he hasn't seen yet, because we know he will see that to some degree in the next 7 episodes. The beat that you're kind of seeing and that they're hitting is that Walt has revealed Heisenberg to Hank. That element has entered their dynamic, which is so specific and has kind of been developed for five seasons. That's the thing. That was one of the things, like one of the real kind of interesting things I was really waiting to see play out. How Walt would introduce Heisenberg into the Walt-Hank dynamic.
Yeah.
And also to what extent that kind of alters Hank in a way, like how Hank responds to him.
And it's really smart the way they don't show Hank's reaction to that, because of course that's the cliffhanger. It's what does Hank do now? And when I say cliffhanger, I mean it's still a very satisfying end to an episode, but like...
For me, it's like Hank doesn't even have to know anything about it. Just the fact that we are going to see... or have seen that Walt will expose Heisenberg to Hank and that he's not just going to deal with Hank on the Walt basis. See, this is the thing. I mean, obviously, he's kind of playing the Walt face and he's kind of trying to be Walt like, I'm just a dying man with a car wash. Think of me, your family, think of family, think of all this. But just the thing is, like, Hank doesn't respond to that. He's now not at a point where Walt can sweet talk him or kind of play Walt to him. But he's past that. He will, in a way, only sees Heisenberg. So he's just like, I'm going to give you Heisenberg.
But also, Walt loves having problems. He loves having enemies. That's why he seeks out Hank. That's why he, you know, is looking for Leaves of Grass. He's looking for a problem for his genius chemist mind to solve. So the fact he's so confrontational with Hank is because he really wants there to be a conflict. For Hank, it's horrible. He does this in spite of himself. But Walt is so fully in control and just soaking up the sort of conflict between the two of them. It's kind of gross. He's a disgusting human being.
Terrifying. It's fucking...
Just one thing I want to mention before we leave this scene is it's very interesting that Hank says, leave the kids with me, then leave Skylar and the kids with me, and then we'll talk. First of all, that's a very funny darkly funny inverse of what happened last season with, you know, Skylar being kind of written off as crazy while they took care of the kids. But also... he's going to really freak out when he finds out that Skylar knows because, that's pretty... That'll be interesting to see how they play out. So, do you want to... We should probably wrap this up.
Yeah.
Do you want to just quickly talk about, you know, what the next on...
I didn't really get all that much from it. I'm guessing you've probably watched it a few more times.
I watched it a few times. So, spoilers, if you don't want to see the next time on, it's pretty vague, but, you know... do what you will. I'm also going to stop watching them for the last few episodes. Yeah. But just for these ones, I kind of, it's fun. So anyway, this spoiler was, it was just kind of like ominous monologues. I forget the details of Skylar, Walt, and Saul. It doesn't really matter. What was important was Jesse was saying, I could be the one to bring him down. He's a monster. Something to that effect. So as I was saying, they make a point of talking about the the Huel and Jesse cigarettes. I think potentially next episode, Jesse could really turn against Walt. Whether or not he goes to Hank is another issue. Matter, I don't know. I will also tell you that from going by last season, AMC and Breaking Bad were really good about what they put in the previews. Like they would tell you. All right. So for instance, like the Dead Freight teaser was just kind of like, what are we gonna do, I'm talking about an ocean of methylamine. That's kind of all we got. The gliding overall teaser just hinted at like sort of they're gonna confront the prison problem. Of course that episode's about so much more, so you know, I think I'm going to watch them for a while because they kind of give a hint. And then it's also, they give you false expectations of the episode, which is good because it means bigger surprise. Anyway, let's wrap this up. I guess we can't pick a favorite moment.
Probably Walt's reflection. Reflection in the... I don't know, sure. It's a really just...
I think when I saw Heisenberg written on the wall, that was my biggest like, oh my God. But I'll just choose the punch because it's fucking satisfying.
Or tread lightly. Tread lightly is almost, it's like running away. Like
no, but it's the new say my name / I'm the one who knocks.
Oh yeah. And it's so good. Just like as a word, like just as two words coupled together, I reckon tread lightly is just so,
I just like that say my name, run, tread lightly. Like very common phrases have become like, that's how good Cranston's delivery is. Oh, he can turn like lines that just aren't,
turn it on its head,
aren't really kind of particularly new, but he just makes them iconic.
Cannot wait to watch like just the first like few episodes once all this is over. Or even just, I mean, obviously rewatch it again, like, over time, many times.
Yeah.
Just watching the first couple of Jesse and Walt interactions.
It's really hard now. It's
I don't know. Like, that'll be so... It's already interesting, kind of, like, with all this information that we have now. It's just so...
I mean, but already I feel like they're just heading towards a hell that, like... Thinking about when we were watching the first and second season, I can't go back. Like, I will. If I watched it again, I'm sure I would. But it's hard to go back to that headspace where everything is... You know,
oh no! Not as dire. Yeah, not to be in that headspace. I'm just kind of thinking.
Yeah,
like,
to
you
see
have
it
no
retrospectively.
Idea.
Yeah, it's oh, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. Anyway,
I'm so excited.
We'll see you next week on Monday or Tuesday or sometime.
We should also do season four at some point.
Yeah, and season four will be going up sometime. Thanks for listening so much.
Thanks. Yeah.
Email us at cavaliersdocinema@gmail.com.
If you see any good, like, theories pages or anything like that as well, feel free to email those.
Yeah,
like,
also, we're I forgot we have a Twitter account, which I forgot about. so, @CavaliersDoCinema.
Yep.
That confounded Twitter thing. And also the blog, CavaliersDoCinema.blogspot.com, or specifically for the television stuff, CavaliersDoTelevision.blogspot.com. To play you out, here is Jim White with...
Wait a minute.
Hang on. With Word Mule. Have a good one.
Have a good one.